Golf Show with Golf Guys, Frank Gunning and Sam McKee, Masters Reacts Pod. John Rahm picks up his first green jacket, his second major championship, and we got to watch 1,000 hours of golf on Easter Sunday. Sammy, has your butt recovered from the hurting it put on the couch this weekend?
Listen, No, it did not. this is very unlike me. I ditched my family. My parents returned home from... They returned home from Spain. They were away for 2.5 months. They came
fitting
home.
Place.
Yeah, it's very fitting. They came home. There was a dinner scheduled at my sister's place. And I simply said, I am one of the hosts of the golf show. I need to watch this entire round of golf from 8:30 a.m. till 7:30 p.m. I cannot miss one millisecond of this. And I did not. My couch, it got its use this weekend. I was rotting on it a long time. You said fitting winner. I watched John Rahm win the Masters. And Gunnar, I have to admit something to you. Something I admitted to J.D. Bunkus over text, and he made fun of me vehemently for it.
Shocker.
Yeah, that I got a little emotional watching John Rahm win that Masters. And I loved his reaction. I thought it was an all-time great reaction in terms of the arms in the air immediately. Just the feeling, the ecstasy of winning that incredible tournament. But then walking off and him kissing his wife and kissing his baby and the whole deal, I got emotional. And I think I realized that, I love the guy. We've had a long time with him now where he's been one of the best players. He's a fitting winner. But I did realize the reason I think I was emotional is that this is the longest possible point until the Masters starts again. I don't want to think about how far away the Masters are, because now that it's over, we get so excited for this week. We look forward to it. We talk about it. We see the commercials. We get so excited, and it's gone now. So congrats to John Rahm, but I'm just emotional that we don't get it again for another 360 whatever days.
Yeah, I was a little emotional as well. Soft spot for Rombo in my house. I dragged my wife to the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas for our honeymoon, and we saw him win there. He's a sacred golfer in our home.
It's not like you dragged her to, the John Deere Open. I mean, you did go to the Bahamas. It's not the worst place to go.
It's true. This is very true. Maybe you'd feel a little differently about the fact that she had a fever, and I'm like, come on, you got to come watch the golf. So she was just walking around in a fever on the last day there. So there we go. Love you, honey. Thanks for that.
100-degree Fahrenheit weather with a fever. Just what you want to be doing, slogging around a golf course, no shade.
Sending her to find me beers. What a husband I am. Not here to talk about that. Here to talk about a great husband, I'm sure, in John Rahm. And I love what you said about it being so far away, because we have this thing in all sports, be it, sometimes maybe the Super Bowl doesn't get this, but I'm sure the tennis sickos are like, Wimbledon's okay, but I actually like, no, we cannot do this with golf. The Masters is the Masters for a reason. Sometimes you get the hipster takes of, I actually like the Open. I like the Ryder Cup better. The Masters is the Masters. It'll never be anything other than this. And I'm with you. Very, very sad. Forlorn at how long it's going to be.
Gunnar, you may say it is literally a tradition unlike any other.
I've heard that said about this very thing.
I made that joke to Allie yesterday, and she's like, is that what they say? And I was like, yes, that's what they say. She's like, good one. And she walked out of the room. She was a little sour with the amount of golf I watched this weekend. Not a lot of help around the house from your old boy this weekend.
Yeah. No comments here. I had the exact opposite. I sent my family to Sudbury, so good luck with them up there as I watch copious amounts of golf there. In terms of the win, this is a very sports talk radio way I'm going to phrase it to you, but hey, that's what we do in our side gig. This is our main job. I've decided that's our side gig. Did John Rahm win, or did Brooks Koepka lose it? What happened there? Was that more of a Rombo taking it, or a Koepka collapse?
I love this question. This is very Skip Bayless. I love this question. Is it a cop out to say both?
No, not at all.
I think Koepka really, really wore down. Fatigue set in. You could tell that fatigue set in. He hasn't played a lot of golf on the Live Tour, obviously. He won on the Live Tour last week, but they haven't played a lot of events. And you talk about how all these guys who are playing on the PGA Tour, it's been a really busy start to the schedule for these guys, right? With these early designated events, you think about Riviera, you think about the Players, you think about all these other ones that they've kind of had the big money in. You think about Bay Hill, which is just all these courses are hard and it's big money on the line. It's a lot of preparation going into the Masters. Like, these guys have really been prepping for this, right? For like, to, it's kind of leading up to this point to be ready, to have your major championship reps, to have your, you know, your ability to grind through what an absolute slog the Masters can be. And Brooks just didn't have it. And I thought he played brilliant golf for the first 2 days. Like, that was as good as it gets at a major championship in terms of fairway, green, two putt, fairway, green, one putt. Like, he was dialed in. He looked like major championship Brooks. And it just flipped. It flipped, and it's really, really hard to not make the case that it was fatigue, right? Like, there's no, it's really, really hard to not make the case that it was fatigue.
Yeah, I think it's just as much mental fatigue as it is
Absolutely.
Physical.
It's a great
the
point.
Idea of being locked in, and it wasn't like he had to go play 18 holes on Saturday, and then he got to sleep it off and rest and get reset and do what he knows how to do in major championships. Mm-hmm. No, it's all jammed into a day. He also had pretty much a full day where he didn't hit a golf shot. You think of how early he finished on Friday, how late he was able to get, what, 3 holes in on Saturday or whatever it was, but before they got rained out there. And then the other
They
got to seven.
Yeah.
So then think about all the golf he had to play Sunday morning again. And it's just, for a guy who's talked about how physically hampered he's been, for sure there was some of that, but I think it's just the mental reps as well. And then, you know, the other part of it as well is you look at, this is now the second time Brooks has been in a back or a final pair of a major, going back to the one that Lefty won the PGA at, whatever it was, 2021,
Kiawah
2019.
Island, right?
Yeah, the one in Kiawah. And he didn't have it that day either. And it doesn't take much for a guy to go from unflappable in big moments, hello Rory McIlroy, to, oh my God, can you close? Oh my God, can you get over the hump? And I'm not saying that's what happened with Brooks. It's entirely possible this woke him up and he's going to come punch everybody in the mouth at the U.S. Open later this year. That is entirely in play, but you do wonder how much that confidence thing plays in. So it's 1,000% a little bit of both. I'm not taking anything away from Rombo, even if Koepka parred out and played a pretty solid round of golf. Rombo had it in him to go beat him, so I'm not taking anything away from him, but I think it was definitely a little bit of a collapse on Koepka's part as well.
Well, there's no question it was a collapse. Like, what was the stat about that Justin Ray put out there about the lowest, you know, the lowest 36 hole scores to not win a major?
Yeah.
And it was him and two Greg Normans. So, yeah. You know, if you want to get your live jokes off, that is, there's no better place than that. Like, that is poetic. Absolutely poetic for Brooks Koepka. Like, he was dominant, Gunnar. Those first two rounds where we were hoping that he wasn't going to run away and hide because we wanted a compelling weekend, and it flipped so hard. Like, his back nine, the way it started on Sunday, like, the way he played 12 was borderline amateur. Like, he missed the green way left. That chip he hit, he kind of rushed it and... Like,
oh, it, man, the one where he flubbed it.
He kind of rushed it and he barely, and then he had to make a bogey. It's just, he made a couple, he made a beautiful birdie on 16 to get back within three, right? Like,
yep.
There was moments, he made a couple birdies. It just, he really, really fell apart for like a 20 hole stretch. And guess what? You can't do that at the Masters and win. It's just not going to be, it's not possible for him. So I really, really loved having Brooks back in the mix, and I think it's a really fascinating thing for him to literally just play major championship golf, which he has talked about ad nauseum as being the only thing he cares about. So, like, I think it's a really fascinating thing to just kind of have this major championship killer that plays on a different tour, and he just comes over for the four majors and tries to take it away from the PGA guys. Like, it's a fascinating thing. But he's going to have to get some more reps in if he wants to win, because he really faded.
Yeah, if that is going to be the narrative, like, you know me, we don't need to do our live yelling. We've done enough of that.
Yeah,
even on
absolutely.
Other radio stations today, we've already done that. But I think it is going to be an awesome narrative for the game of golf. If this is like, because, you know, you and I weren't alive for this era of sports, but the idea of like, oh, you should see this guy on the Russian team for hockey. He's nuts. And it's like, well, why can't I see him? We just used to being able to see everybody. And not that Koepka's an unknown that we don't know anything about, but if he's this interloper, it is going to be an awesome, awesome narrative for the game there. Lefty Magic.
I think we feel like we should get more into Rom.
Okay, yeah, sure. Go right ahead. What do you got? Where do you want to go?
I just, it's a nice, you know, start to the season for Rahm, where he's been red hot, playing great golf, couple wins. How many wins has he had? Was this his third win?
One of them was on the Euro Tour, I think. So he had like 3 wins and 5 starts or something like that. He was on an incredible, incredible run to the year.
Yeah, and he is one of the biggest stars in the world, if not the biggest star in the world when it comes to golf. Like, I think it's him and Rory. I would put 1-2 as the guys who, you know, amateur golf fans would probably get behind, right? Like,
I think so. Spieth probably still has that. Yeah, I know. We don't subscribe, but yes.
Yeah, so I've been, like, it just was an incredible performance from the guy who, listen, he got a bad draw, right? Like, he got the bad side of the draw. Yeah. So he had 4 wins and 10 starts this year for John Rahm, and he's made $13 million so far this season. So thanks, Liv, because good Lord, like, that would have been half that last year with that for the winnings. But it's just, I was so impressed. The stretch of golf that really impressed me the most was when he got sent out there on Saturday morning in an absolute disaster of weather. It was, I don't think I've ever seen, because I think Nant said it during the broadcast, normally, or it was Immelman or one of them said it, that normally if you see this much rain, there's electricity and they're not playing in it. So it was like weather I had not seen guys playing golf in, and it killed guys. It killed Justin Thomas. He went out there, you watch that walk and talk.
Oh,
he was so pissed off. M blew it. Like, there was guys in that just, they did not perform. And Rahm goes out there during that stretch and shoots 1 under par and makes himself, that really, to me, I know he was still 4 strokes back and there was moments, but that could have sewered him. He could have been completely out of it. He could have gone out there and shot +2, +3, and then he's way back, and then Brooks is way ahead sitting there having Mai Tais when he's, you know, off for that long stretch. I was just really, really impressed with that stretch of golf from Rahm, and it really seems to me that that might have won him the golf tournament, that he stayed within shouting distance of Koepka in the worst conditions I've ever seen. Those conditions literally killed Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods was hobbling around like a guy who just, you know, stepped on someone's foot at first base and couldn't walk around. Like, he was done. So
He was hobbling around like he should have been after that security guard slid into him at the Masters.
Oh my God. The year he won.
Can you imagine that guy stole that moment from us?
Buddy, I actually, that thought crosses my mind like once a month, I shudder.
The two luckiest guys in the world are that guy and the Segway driver who ran over Usain Bolt at the Olympics.
Oh my God, yeah.
The idea of just like random security guys maiming all-time great in their moment of greatness, could you imagine? Those guys, they should thank their lucky stars. I echo everything you said about Rahm. It's awesome to see him kind of tick another one off. Mm-hmm. We kind of do this thing with young players. We've done it with Scheffler where we already kind of think of him as a 4-time major winner or a 3-time major winner. And it's so hard to win majors. So to see him progressively adding another, I'm not ruling him out adding one more this year. He can absolutely do that. He's got the game to do it at any of the courses. And to your point, I think probably outside of Spieth and Rory, he is the next guy that's broken through to the casuals. I think Koepka reminded everybody of himself this weekend that maybe he's just a touch ahead of him on that list. But yeah, I'm with you there. And yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, did you like the him talking about Zach Ertz with the first hole?
I love that. I thought that was hilarious. I saw that text going around and I was unsure because it was before I had seen the thing, and I was unsure if it was a joke or what was happening. And then I heard what Rahm said, and I'm like, wow, that is real. That's awesome. That's just it's so funny how big the NFL is. This guy just won the marquee thing in his sport.
Yeah.
And let me shout out a tight end on the Eagles.
I know he's on Arizona now, but a pretty average tight end at this point.
Yeah, he's a fine player. Yeah,
But where would he rank in the players?
In hockey parlance, middle six.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he is like the 250th best guy of the NFL. And he shouts him out in his master speech.
Let me put it this way. If there was Liv for the NFL, Zach Ertz would have gotten an offer and he would have taken it. He's a Taylor Gooch is what he is.
That's a great way to put it. But I just thought it was hilarious that he said that. And after he finishes, he's like, don't ever do that again, please.
Yeah,
it's like he was funny, but he's like, please don't ever do that again. So I just think that, you know, I really love Rahm's appreciation for the history of the game and his ability to look within. Like, I saw a clip this morning of him talking about how he drives the ball. Like, my algorithm on TikTok, on Facebook, on Instagram is all John Rahm. Like, it's just John Rahm totally right now. And I listen to him talking about the way he drives the ball, and he's harkening back to Mo Norman, him talking about Seve, and, you know, the moment with Olathabo coming off the green there. Like, to me, it really matters to have appreciation for history in your sport, right? Like, we talk about that in Toronto all the time with, like, guys who play for the Leafs, and you see the history of the Leafs with Salming coming out this year, and what an incredible moment that was. And you have Sittler, and you have all these guys. And I it matters to me that guys appreciate that. And to have Rahm be one of the biggest stars in the world and love the game and love the history of the game so much, that matters to me. And he cares, man. He really, really cares. And I am really, really rooting for him going forward here. Like, okay, this is going to get a little hot here. But would you rule out the career Grand Slam getting finished by John Rahm this year?
Yes. I will definitively go on record as to say he will not win the career Grand Slam.
Well, so if he wins PGA and then gets the Open as the last one?
Yeah. He's not going to win three of the four majors this year. I'm going to go on record as to say that.
I'm just putting it out there.
Okay,
I was going to say,
hey, if you want to call it, that's quite the shot to take.
I'm not calling it, but I'm not ruling it out.
Okay, I will definitively go on record and rule it out.
Okay.
Love you, Rombo. It's not happening. The other funny thing about that is just you mentioned everything about Rahm there, and Kepka's the exact opposite.
Exact
he would have got up there and been like, golf sucks. What are you all even doing here?
100%.
Isn't there a basketball game on? Aren't the Nets trying to get in the play-in, bro? Why are you even here? So it's just
true.
It's a great juxtaposition between the two of them. Lefty, got to give him a shout. That was unreal. The crowd seemed to be coming around him a little more.
Absolutely,
I was unsure of how they were going to react to him. He wanted that bird. That was to win the Masters, as far as he's concerned. And honestly, good on him. That must have felt so good. The fact that everything that happened with Tiger this week, you know, that spurned him on a little bit as well. We are not lefty guys. I have spent more time making fun of him. Hold on. You've had dalliances in the past.
Listen, I was rooted my you-know-what off for him at the at Kiowa.
Oh, no, I was all Brooks that day.
I was,
come on, Brooksy, kill him!
I even had money on Brooks in that tournament. I was still rooting for Phil. And I think that yesterday was really special. That kind of stuff just doesn't happen. And listen, you can talk about how he's sewered his legacy and all the stuff that's happened in the last year, which you can't overlook. Like, the stuff that he said, you know, the off-the-record stuff with Alan Shipanek and all that. Like, and, you know, him going to live and all, like, all the stories about. We don't need to get into all the stuff with Phil. But I think that's what's great about the Masters is, you know, it's just a guy out there on his favorite golf course in the world. Nobody has any phones. You're not connected to the outside world. It's almost like this weird sort of, like, alien planet where you just go there. And you can kind of, you talk about the history all the time. It's the appreciation of the history of a game. The guy that's won three jackets, the guy that's hit some unbelievable golf shots. I love them showing that shot of him from the pine straw, which is
awesome.
That's an all-time shot in the history of the sport. I found myself rooting for him big time yesterday. And I was just a really special one because, listen, the guy just needed it. Probably on a personal level, on a, you know, professional level. The stuff he's been going through, and he tries to be Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky, and you hear him talking about how he's playing his best. Like, he's just a confident guy, but, you know, you got the truth serum in him, and you talk to him, you know, one-on-one without anybody around, he would tell you how much he needed that and how much it meant to him. And seeing that fist pump on eight, that has he ever been that passionate? Like, that
not was... Not since he jumped 1.2 inches when he won his first green jacket.
That was
not
like...
since then.
That... It was a all-time reaction. I couldn't believe how excited he was. He's a putter raise, double massive fist pump. It meant the world to him, and I just appreciate how much it mattered to him. That's basically what it is.
Honestly, what it was to me was it was a reminder that this live stuff is going to end one day. Like, the schism, we don't need to get into how long it's going to take or what that looks like, but one day it's going to end. And whether the end means there's a coexistence, whether the end means it folds and all the guys come back into the fold, that Phil's going to ride off into the sunset at the Masters. He is. Like, it looked ugly for a while there, but that is still a place that's magic to him. They want to see magic from him there. And, you know, it's funny. We always link him and Tiger, of course. And Tiger, it feels like it's going to be pulling teeth to one day get him to hit the ceremonial tee shot.
No,
like, once he agrees to do it, but he's not going to do it when he's 57.
No.
He's not going to be Tom Watson's age and do it. He's going to have to be really, really old. Whereas Phil is like, can I hit it this year? I know I'm playing, but could I get in there? He so badly wants that, and why wouldn't you? So again, just like we talk about with Rahm and Koepka, it's like there's always a great juxtaposition between those two. And yeah, so, I was so happy to see that.
So we've got to go quickly here because we're gonna get Shane Ryan on and get more into the Masters here. But what letter grade would you give Liv's showing at the Masters this weekend?
I'll go B+.
I was gonna go A. Just to have three guys in the top 10, I think even the Lord Saudi would not have had that in his wildest dreams.
I think the reason I don't give it an A is because I still think Cam Smith is your white knight and you need him to be the guy. If he was at the tip of the spear, for lack of a better term.
Still made the cut.
He did. He wasn't in there. I just think if Liv is putting together a poster board for not this year, but 5 years from now, Cam Smith is the guy. But I give it a B+. Patrick Reed had an awesome showing. We can't make all the 54-hole jokes about him. Lefty looked great. He's going to look great there. He's going to have moments like this all the time. And good on Koepka for showing up. So, hey, I good on Koepka for not wearing those dumb shirts. All the rest of those guys can wear whatever they want. I love that Brooksy hates Liv just as much as I do.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of this weekend is how every single PGA guy, and they're talking about it in the Butler cabin, and everything you hear is like, oh, he's basically a PGA guy. And then he loses, and it's like, oh, that conversation kind of dried up pretty quick. Like, oh,
not that he's basically a PGA guy, that he hates Liv just as much as
the PGA guy. He's just basically PGA guy. He's not even a Liv guy. Like, he doesn't even like it.
You cannot lob this grenade and be like, all right, got to talk to Shane Ryan. No one was claiming him as a PGA guy. We were just saying he hates Liv and is embarrassed of it, too. That's all we were saying.
Well, I don't think he's embarrassed.
To speak for all of the PGA Tour community at large, who I have definitely spoke with at that players-only meeting.
I don't think he's going to be too embarrassed when the check's clear.
No, like, of course. That's the only time he's not embarrassed.
No, listen, I don't know why everyone thinks he hates it so much. He gets to play meaningless golf in between all the majors was all he cares about. Like, he said, oh, maybe I wouldn't have gone when I was healthy. And every writer was like, oh, my God, he hates it so much. He hates it. He wishes he was on the PGA so bad.
You know who's a great guy to ask about this? Shane Ryan. Golf Digest. We'll do it next on The Golf Show. Golf Guys, Brent Gunning and Sam McKee here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Golf Show. Brent Gunning, Sam McKee here. Very, very happy to welcome in one of our favorites. Major weeks, we got to bring in one of our favorites, Shane Ryan. Check out his new book on the Ryder Cup, The Cup They Couldn't Lose. It's out now. Order it. You can find that on his Twitter, at Shane Ryan here. Shane, thanks so much for taking some time. How are you doing today?
Yeah, always good to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always a fun conversation. So, you know, there's obviously a lot to chew in on the first major of the year. Rombo, big win, second major for him. But I actually wanted to talk about, you're tweeting about the guy who lost it last night a little bit, Koepka, and the idea of losing his edge in majors. You know, this was a guy who for so long was unflappable, could not lose. Major time was Brooksy time. Then he had the one against Phil at Kiawa where he couldn't quite hack it. You know, he had a bit of a fall from grace yesterday. How hard is it for a guy like Koepka to just stay as sharp as possible? This has always been the question with Liv, but majors is a completely different animal.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I'm working on a piece about this for Golf Digest based on that tweet you saw, and I think the title of it is going to be something like, "In Golf, Clutch is Never Permanent." And I think with Koepka, you can find an interesting parallel with Rory McIlroy, who is a guy who, again, you know, almost going back a full decade now, when he won his majors, particularly his last two in 2014, he not only won them, but was great, right? I mean, he just seemed kind of like indomitable, like he was super clutch and felt like he scared everybody down and was the man. And you kind of expect that to last, but, you know, we see with Rory, it didn't last. And he really struggles when he's under the gun now on Sundays. So Koepka, again, same thing. He was the alpha dog. He was the big deal. Then his last major, his PGA Championship, people forget this. You know, he won, but he was 5 over on the back nine, and he almost blew it. It was just a matter of nobody was really close to him except Dustin Johnson, and Johnson was kind of flailing too. But little things like that, I have this theory that they kind of get in your head and stay there. And since then, you know, I went through the list of my tweets, but he, you know, Phil Akiwa, you mentioned, you know, Gary Woodland, he lost to him. He played over par yesterday at Augusta. And there's two more examples. There was one U.S. Open where he was close and had a really bad last round. And it's just one of those funny things where, you know, you're on top of the world and you look for all the world like the toughest guy on the course and you're staring everybody down. Nobody's going to beat you. And then just like that, it can go. And when it goes quickly. And it tends to go for a long time to the point that, you know, I think Rory McIlroy has had the quote that it feels right now like he's trying to win his first major again. I mean, such has been his, you know, his struggles. And I guess you probably look to Jordan Spieth. There's a lot of people that this happens to. The only one it never seemed to happen to is Tiger, which, you know, makes him Tiger. But it's, it's this phenomenon. And I wasn't at all surprised that Koepka, despite looking unbeatable in those first three rounds yesterday, kind of the armor fell off and he was pretty vulnerable, it looked like, out there.
So just doing some quick math, if Rory's going to be Tiger, he just needs to take like the 13 years off, and then like 2039, we'll get his green jacket, and he'll win the Grand Slam, and we'll all be laughing. All right, happy. I mean, you made me feel so much better about that. I think that's such a good point that you bring up because, you know, these guys I'm about to mention, they haven't accomplished what a guy like Koepka or a guy like Rory has, but we are so victim of becoming kind of prisoners of the moment here. You know, Scheffler heading into this week, he had the win, he played well at match play, and everyone's saying, oh, it's his to lose. And he played fine, but he wasn't really a part of the mix other than for 5 minutes on the back nine there on Sunday. You know, it does seem like we're so quick to anoint guys. And, you know, John Rahm's a perfect example. It feels like he's already won 4 majors and he just got his second. Do you think it's just that golf is so, it's such a kind of knife fight at the top? It's not like other sports where, okay, LeBron is LeBron in the NBA, or if you're a hockey fan, McDavid is McDavid, or, you know, whatever the other sports is. It feels like with golf, it's just so cyclical in its nature, and we get in such a rush to anoint these guys when they're just another one of a very good pack. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, you're totally right. And, you know, I think we read into certain guys too psychologically in ways that are just inaccurate. Anybody who saw Full Swing saw a side of Brooks Koepka that probably they had never suspected before. Like, oh, geez, he seemed tough. I didn't realize he was, you know, neurotic, right? And like Scheffler's, you know, by his face, he looks like the most even-keeled guy out there. Like, oh, just what you need to be a golfer, right? He doesn't really feel any emotions. And he's just kind of on a complete level. Well, even when he won last year at Augusta, you know, he was up at 4 a.m. crying to his wife that the moment was too big for him.
Which I would really be doing as well, yeah, Shane.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Yeah, I mean, you know, just like maybe not even show up. Be like, is it better to show up and be Greg Norman or just not to go?
Honestly.
Just like, tell your wife, like, break my leg with this thing so I have an excuse not to choke. I mean, these moments are, it's such a mentally taxing game. And, yeah, I have friends who have a theory that, you know, Scottie Scheffler's four-putt on the 18th hole when he won last year ruined him for majors because it's stuck in his head. I mean, that's ridiculous, obviously. But I do think, no matter how good you are, if the moment comes when you struggle and all of a sudden the pressure gets to you and things start to get shaky, I just think the psychological impact of that is almost unpredictable, but it can stay with you for a very long time. Again, no matter who you are or what you've accomplished in the past, you don't have to be, you know, Lee Westwood, who always kind of failed under pressure. You can be Rory, who won 4 times. You can be Brooks Koepka, who won 4 times. This is the kind of thing that can happen.
God, how much, Shane, does Koepka hate that episode of Full Swing on Netflix? Like, the amount of casual golfing,
he would give all the live money to Netflix to delete that off the surface of the earth.
The amount of people who aren't like hardcore golf fans in my life that know I am, that have come to me and be like, boy, that Koepka's a real head case. Boy, that Koepka, like, everyone talked about that episode. And I feel like everybody kind of measures who he is against that episode now as a casual. He would love to scrub that from the internet.
I suspect you're right. You know, he puts a good face on it. He goes, no, I thought it was fair. I thought it was a fair depiction and all that. But it's funny because even that doesn't tell you everything. I mean, the guy was going through a debilitating injury. Mm. And, you know, the funny thing is, like he said, the Masters, he just got his full flexibility back in December of last year. And that's after almost 2 years of going through that rehab. And the minute he got that back, here he is again, winning everything, right? So as much as he's a head case, you know, he obviously part of his decision to take the live money was feeling that he couldn't win on the PGA Tour anymore. The minute he gets healthy, he's fine again. So it's there's all these elements to it. And, yeah, I think just as human beings, we see somebody on TV and we think we can, you know, look at their face and know everything. And we're often wrong. And then we see a documentary which has its own agenda, right? And we think, oh, God, he's a head case. And it's somewhat true, but even that, you look past it and there's more layers there.
So you were doing some tweeting yesterday about something that stuck out to me as well when I was watching John Rahm at Butler Cabin and his post game or his post round thing where he was out on the park there talking to everybody. His appreciation for the history of the game is something that I absolutely love about him. The way he's talking about, you know, Seve and the way the embrace with Ola Thobel when they walked off the 18th green and just his general appreciation for the sport makes him 10 times more lovable. I love that about Rahm.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm kind of a history guy, not just with golf. I like history in general, and he does too. And I've always thought there's a certain amount of broader thinking or intelligence. You know, when somebody like that is into history, you go, wow, they're not your ordinary jock, right? Mm. And he, I had a moment, you probably saw in the tweet, where I was covering the WGC Workday in 2021, which was at the Concession Golf Club in Florida. It had been moved there because of COVID. It had been the Mexico one. But anyway, the Concession is this famous moment from Ryder Cup history, 1969, where Jack Nicklaus conceded the putt to Tony Jacklin. And, you know, even a golf fan doesn't have to know it. Even a professional golfer doesn't have to know it. But I asked all the players, I thought it would be a cool story. Like, would you have given that putt? You know, would you have done what Jack Nicklaus did? And it was funny because Justin Thomas, Tyrrell Hatton, they were like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never heard of that. And the Concession Golf Club where they were playing was named after this moment. It was designed by Nicklaus and Jackson. So they're playing at this course and they have no concept of what that is. And other players like kind of vaguely knew it, and they're like, no, I never would have given the putt. They didn't really understand the context of the sportsmanship and all that. And there were two guys that gave these deep, deep answers, not only knew it, but had clearly thought about it. One of them was Xander Schauffele, which really surprised me, but he had some great perspective. And John Rahm was the other. And Rahm said, I'm a huge fan of the history of the game and all this stuff. And he gave this really involved answer about, you know, how Jack Nicklaus had, you know, didn't want to humiliate an entire island nation and Tony Jacklin and the UK and everything and how forward thinking it was. And he just, I heard that and I was just like, man, what a smart, intelligent person he is. And then yesterday at Butler Cabin and some of the other stuff he said, it was just phenomenal. And another thing I thought about after tweeting, which was really cool, is that he doesn't just like history and understand it. He uses it to his advantage. So I read a Spanish language interview where he was talking about how Rafa Nadal, when he played Federer in that famous 5-set Wimbledon final in 2008, had this moment in the 4th set where he was up a break and he thought to himself, oh my God, I'm going to win Wimbledon. And because he had that thought, he blew it, of course. Yeah. He eventually went and won in the 5th set, but you know, having that thought was not good for him. And Rahm thought of that yesterday in that perspective of like, don't let yourself go there. Just focus. And then the other thing was he asked Tony Finau earlier in the week when Finau was playing Tiger in 2019 when Tiger won that famous green jacket. Finau hit in the water on 12, and John Rahm asked him, you know, did you hit a good shot on that hole? And Finau said, yeah, I did. It was just, you know, went the wrong way or, you know, aimed it the wrong direction. And it was one roll away from being perfect. And Rahm, when he got to 12 yesterday, said, okay, don't aim right, aim left. The goal is to be dry. And so even recent history, he takes these moments and he looks at them, whether it's psychology, whether it's strategy, and it helps him. I mean, it might have helped him win the green jacket yesterday. That's how smart this guy is, along with being super talented and obviously very competitive.
Are we sure he wasn't thinking about it after his drive on 18, though? Like, I feel
right
like
before, actually. Right before.
I feel like it might have crept in there because he took a little longer than he usually did over the ball, and you could see him doing that deep thought, and he took a big, deep breath, and then he just jackknifed it into the woods and barely made the fairway. How many guys can say they won the Masters without making the fairway at 18? It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else in the history. And he actually had a funny quote about that. He said right before that shot, you know, he felt like he had won the Masters. Obviously, he was 4 shots up, and he said to his caddy, you know, it's unbelievable how great I've hit the fade all week. I've just been, even under pressure, everything, it's always been there for me. And he does it, and he absolutely just hits a shot that, you know, even for me would be a bad shot, right? Yeah. And it was, hilarious. And he said after, he goes, I never should have said that. That was a big mistake.
Yeah, it's funny. It is funny just hearing how he thinks about the mental side of the game, and then he has that story afterwards of Zach Ertz texting him 10 minutes before he tees off of, don't worry, it's a piece of cake. And it's like, yeah, maybe that crept in. Maybe John Rahm shouldn't talk to anybody before a round of golf, because it does seem pretty clear that if you're able to lock in that regard. But yeah, just hearing that story, it kind of puts a whole new spin on him getting that text before the round. You know, if we're going to talk about magic moments at Augusta, you referenced it there, Tiger 2019. Lefty's day yesterday wasn't that, but it was a pretty awesome moment in the sun for a guy who has had a really weird last couple of years. And I mean weird good, and I mean weird bad. He had the win at Kiowa that we never saw coming. He had all of the stuff with Liv where he was, you know, very vocal but didn't want to be. And to have him have a moment like that, the patrons clearly love him. And, you know, it, to me, it's just a sign that, or not a sign, but to me, it's a reminder of what the game of golf is going to look like when I think this Liv stuff peters out, whatever way it is, be it a coexistence or be it, you know, the tour just eventually folding. It is going to come back to, you know, peace and prosperity in the world of golf, for lack of a better term. And that's just what I kind of felt washing over me watching Mickelson roll that in on 18 yesterday.
Yeah, I think and hope that you're right. It was, somebody made the point the other day of like, think of that win at Kiowa and how much the perception of that has changed over the last couple of years because of, you know, everything Mickelson's done and gone through. It should just be like this unbelievable feel-good story, right? And now it's got 8 million different kinds of contacts, and you can have 8 million different opinions about it. But yeah, I mean, like, even yesterday, as great as that was, it's sort of like you've always got the shadow of like Liv and what he's done and all that stuff. But you're right. I mean, it just speaks to his greatness. The guy is 52 years old and he's doing this. And, you know, if Rahm had just tanked, right, it wouldn't have taken much for Rahm to blow to the last few holes, and he could have been in the playoff or he could have been the Masters champion.
Should have taken the dive like JT did for Tiger. That's what he should have done.
Yeah. I don't think you could have convinced Rahm of that. But, yeah. No, it was just, yeah, it really was, in its own way, an incredible moment. And Rahm spoke about it, even saying, yeah, I think he was on 10 or 11 when it happened. And he's going, uh-oh. You know, it really had reverberations across the entire field and all over the course.
Yeah, I just, my biggest takeaway from watching his reaction on 18 when he made that putt and that fist pump so passionate, Shane, I'm like, that man needed that. Like, holy, he really needed that.
Yeah. No, I don't think you're wrong. I think it's a cathartic moment probably for him. And, you know, it'll be on to the next thing tomorrow. Like, don't think for a minute that this is any kind of ending to the Phil Mickelson story. But yeah, it was something. And then, like you said, the gallery appreciated it. There's just something about the guy, isn't there? There's something, a little magic in him, and there always has been.
So this is the first time that all the Liv guys have been, you know, in a major since it really happened last year. You know, it was bubbling up at the Open, but this is the first real big one with all the guys involved. What letter grade, or what would you, you know, how would you rate their performance at Augusta this weekend? To have three guys in the top 10, I'm sure they didn't even have that in their wildest Saudi dreams. It was a pretty good performance for Liv all around, outside of Kevin Na pulling out after the first nine and making poor old Weirzy play by himself for the back nine. But what rating would you give Liv this weekend?
You know, the whole discourse around it is funny to me because there was almost like this weird counter assumption, like, oh, these guys aren't going to be good enough to play, you know, in a major. It's like, I don't know where that came from. The last major was won by a guy who's now in Liv. There are plenty of players on Liv who have won majors. I always thought they'd be fine, right? I mean, I always thought they'd be able to compete. And yeah, I mean, Koepka was maybe a surprise just because, you know, he's recently recovered from injury, but you know, why couldn't someone like Patrick Reed do well? Why couldn't Cam Smith do well? Like Neiman, right? There's all these guys that I fully expected to be able to play well. And so that whole level of discourse, I didn't quite understand. And then, you know, Jaime Diaz said something interesting on the Golf Channel last night that I agreed with. And I was almost waiting for somebody to say it, where it was like, even if Koepka had won, I just don't know that there's any material benefit to Liv. I guess like the theory behind it, if you're saying, oh, this is really good for Liv, the theory behind it is that, okay, Koepka's going to win. And, you know, maybe, yeah, like you said, three of the top five or whatever. And people are going to see this and then start watching Liv golf because they think that the best players now are playing on Liv or something.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the product is good enough, right? I don't know if the energy is there. I don't know if like people's habits are going to change enough that all of a sudden, you know, oh my gosh, we're not watching, you know, Riviera anymore. We're going to watch Liv London or whatever it is. I didn't quite see it. I think even if, you know, obviously Rahm went and won, but even if Koepka had won, I don't think the narrative changes that much. I think that was a little bit like, I don't know, like almost like narrative pushing or in some way. I could be wrong, and it's a hypothetical we won't know, I guess, now, but it just never seemed to me like this is going to be the thing that, like, vaults with to be the biggest golf league in the world. It just, and maybe I'm wrong again, but I didn't see it.
I'm with you. I don't think it changes things, but there's two things that come to my mind on that. One, it's that they definitely want to have a guy say he's a major winner while a LIV player, not somebody they poach.
Yes,
but they want to
yes.
prove that you can do that. Mm-hmm. This is the home of current major champs and all that. But I just love the idea of somebody who watches the Masters and they're like, wow, all the LIV guys are good? Okay, sure, I'll turn it on. And it is the full-on won't you people go back to your shanties from
Motocross
Happy Gilmore. Like, there's music on the range. What's going on? What, a shotgun? What does that even involve? Yeah, it does feel like the kind of perfect or the last event on earth you would want to shepherd people from the Masters straight to live. They could not be more kind of polar opposite there. Last one for me before we let you go, Shane. There was a lot of talk heading into this week about the course is going to play differently. It's so much longer. And, you know, it was a wet, soppy week. I don't know that you could get a true read on that. Where are you at on the idea of them lengthening the course? Do you think we got a true read on it? Do you think we need to kind of wait another year? And, you know, I know this obviously dovetails into the whole distance and debate thing. We don't need to get into all of that, but just the idea of Augusta. It's a course we know so well. You know, 13 might be the most famous golf hole in the world. It's on a pretty short list there. And, you know, it's not quite the hole we once remembered. Do you have a problem with them changing things? Do you think it's what needed to happen? And do we maybe need to wait until we get a more quote-unquote regular weather Masters to find the answer?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, on Thursday, I think there's a little bit of a narrative of like, oh, look, they're all reaching 13 and 2 anyway. But then I thought, yeah, I mean, especially in the final round, I saw a number of layups that, you know, I have not seen the numbers to compare it year to year, but it felt like there were more layups under pressure and it was more of a risk to go for the green on 13 in particular. And I like that. I mean, I think it's fine. You know, it's the same reason, I know we're not getting into it, but the same reason I like the distance rollback thing. It's like, you know, make these guys make tough choices, make them make really difficult shots. I think, you know, like looking at Rahm, you know, when he hit that beautiful draw around the corner, that's what you had to do now to go for it in two on 13. You know, these are big moments. You have to really, you can't just crush a normal drive out there and have, you know, 170 to the green or whatever it is. So I was into it. I think, yeah, lengthening it makes sense. I mean, it's sort of nickel and diming it, right? It's like making a few tougher decisions here and there. Does it make it more interesting? I think in some ways it does. Some people will say, oh, I'd like to see everybody going for it too. That's, you know, I understand that perspective too. It's a really tough argument, but I kind of liked what they did broadly speaking and on 13 in particular. But as you saw, like if it wasn't for the weather, the winner could have been, you know, 20 under again. It's not like they're making a course that's impossible to play or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I'm happy you said that, because when I make all those arguments, my co-host calls me an idiot, but he actually respects you, so he won't get to say that to you. Shane.
I wouldn't say I call you an idiot. I just say that, like, I don't necessarily, when it's, you know, the Masters are on the line, and the three of the best worlds are, two of the best players in the world are laying up, is not exactly what I would love to see, is what I'm getting at here. You know? Is that fair, or no?
I get it. I like the challenge a little bit, but no, I mean, it's, yeah, you want to see guys stepping on it. But I would argue the counter argument is I also don't want to see them going for the green in the par five from like 160.
Yeah.
So it's there's a balance there. Because I think you're right. If there was no chance of going for it, it would be boring. I think it's a little boring if it's like too easy to set yourself up with an eagle putt. Yeah, it's there's a great debate to be had there.
Well, congratulations, Shane. You just booked yourself for a future episode on the golf show in a slower week when it's not an elevated event to talk about that very thing. We always love getting you on, bud. Thanks
man.
So much. Yeah, and again, check out the book, the Ryder Cup book you've got out. Wonderful work on that. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Always fun. Have a good one.
There was Shane Ryan, Golf Digest. Really, really enjoy getting him on. A favorite guest of ours. You'll hear him a couple more times this summer. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy his takes and well-thought-out answers. And a history buff who loves golf, that just feels part and parcel. It sounds actually like a guy we play a lot of golf with during the summer is what it sounds
Shout
like.
Out Primer.
Big shout out to Eric Prime. So another guy we'll give a shout out to. You'll never hear him on this pod because he's a busy guy. But shout out to Kyle Porter. He cooked up a wonderful, wonderful question. After a crazy Masters week, let's ask this again. Out of the following group, who ends their career with the most majors? Rory has 4. Brooks has 4. Spieth, 3. Morikawa, 2. JT, 2. DJ, 2. Rahm, 2. Scheffler, 1. What say you, Sam McKee?
It's an excellent question. If I had, I know I'm a prisoner of the moment, but I probably would have told you that before this weekend that I would be looking at Rahm to finish with the most. I just think out of all those guys listed, Rahm's the best player. I think he's got the most complete game. He's got everything that you need. He can drive the ball beautifully. His short game is amazing. His sand game is amazing. He's a clutch putter. Like he has, I don't think he's the absolute best at anything, but just everything that he does is really solid, and he's got that killer instinct where I think he can put them away and guys are going to fear him if they're in a final group, right? Like they really, he has that factor where you're going up against him. That's something I don't think we've touched on a lot. I think Koepka probably was feeling it. He's playing with one who I don't think, is he ranked number one or is it he's probably number one now.
No, it's Scheffler, but yeah, I haven't seen the update today, but it was Scheffler, yeah.
But to me, it's like, if you ask me who the best player in the world is, I'm saying Rahm, 100%. So he's got that factor going for him. I think he's going to maybe get one more this year even. And I said earlier in the pod that he might win the career Grand Slam this year, which is an incredibly warm take by me. But he's just got the game. If I'm ranking them, I think Morikawa maybe second because he's youngest, right, out of that group? Is he the youngest out of that group, I guess?
I would think he'd have to be, yeah.
And then...
yeah, because Scheffler's sneaky old, and yeah.
I think DJ's done.
Yeah.
Can we agree on that?
We can... look, there's always a world. Phil won at Kiowa. Mm-hmm. Maybe he gets to 3, but he's not going to get to 4, so that takes him out of it completely.
The way that Brooks looked yesterday... well, not yesterday. Earlier in the week. Yeah. The opposite.
Any day but yesterday.
I think he looks like he could really, you know, get one more. So that would get him to 5, and that's a big number. I'm still sticking with my ranking being Rahm 1, Morikawa 2, Brooks 3, Rory 4, because he already has 4. So that would be my ranking. And then you can mix up the rest however you want.
So I think Spieth gets to 4 because he's winning another Masters. He just is. There's no way that for the next 20 years of our life, Jordan Spieth is not going to have a Saturday and a Sunday that just comes together perfectly. We just saw it with Phil Mickelson. Some guys are just magic at that place. He has already proved it early on. He was in the mix again this weekend. I firmly believe Spieth is going to get to 4. And I'm not ruling him out winning a major at one of the other places. So he possibly could get to 5. I'm not putting him there. But for me, I still think it's most likely that it's Rory or Rahm. I think Rory's getting at least one more major. I don't think there's a world where he never wins one. Well, I shouldn't say there's not a world. We just had an awesome conversation with Shane Ryan about exactly that thing, of how hard it is to kind of get it back on board. I think he's getting one more. Is he getting a Masters? I have no idea about that. I do think he's getting one more. You could tell me Brooks would get one more. I'd believe it, but I don't think it's a certainty. So I go Rory, Rahm, Brooks, and Spieth. That's how I look at that list.
Morikawa, I think I'm floored.
Well,
to hear that.
I think he's going to get to 5, and I'm not putting any of those other guys at 5.
Okay.
Is what it is. That's why if we were starting this from this moment on, I'm not taking Rory ahead of Brooks. I'm not taking Rory ahead of Spieth. I'm not taking him ahead of Morikawa. But because he's got the head start, I just to sit here and say, oh, Rahm's going to get 3 more. I think he is, but the list of guys who have won 5 majors is just so short. It's a really, really small club, and I think he'll get there, but I would have thought Rory would have got to 8 if you would have asked me 10 years ago. And Rahm, as good as he's looked, he's never looked like Rory did on that run. The only guy who has is Koepka.
I honestly think that Rahm could get to 7 or 8. Like
he could.
I really believe that his, of all these guys, his game is going to age the best. Like, he's just, like, the... well, how old is he, 28?
The really short backswing, it's not an athletic power swing. That does help him a lot.
He's got God-given talent. He's just an absolute natural. You know, like, it doesn't feel as calculated as a lot of these guys do with their swings and these cookie-cutter swings or whatever. So, I love that question by Kyle, but I'm going to go with Rahm as the all-time leader. I know that's recency bias after this past weekend where he won, but... I really do think that his game's going to age the best, and he has a long time to go here. Actually, before we get to our other topic that we wanted to get to with the RBC this coming weekend, I wanted to talk about the slow play factor with Cantlay, because Cantlay, this has been a big time conversation with him in terms of this past weekend, with how much time and was spent on how slow he was playing. And as two of the fastest golfers, you and I, we play very, very quickly. This should really piss me off, and it does piss me off watching it. But if with all this money on the line and these the gravity of these tournaments, if there's no rule in place, too bad. You can make fun of them as much as you want. You can talk about how annoying it is to watch, which it is, and it's infuriating for the people behind him. Looked like Vic Hovland was ready to wrap his putter around Cantlay's neck by the end of the round. But the PGA Tour is not going to do anything about this, then there's just absolutely nothing you can do.
Yeah, I think the problem is that they're so, it's with the tour and rules regarding anything. I mean, we joke about it with Patrick Reed, and he doesn't have to deal with tour rules officials anymore, but where they come over and they're like, I'm so sorry to even question you about this, sir. It's the whole tack they take with all of it. It's a game of honor, and we love that about it. But, and we joked about it on Saturday's show, the idea of Koepka and Woodland, like, no, they both said that was okay with the holding up five, and we just move along. It's the way rules of this game are kind of enforced. It has to be so egregious for you to get penalized for anything. And it was egregious, but you can't just on Sunday at the Masters decide, oh, we're going to put a guy on the clock now. You need to, we talk about it with baseball. Look how awesome the game is when guys are moving. Guys will learn. Now, golf isn't baseball. You can't just put a set shot clock. Mm-mm. The wind is changing. There are things that impact it. A roar will pop up on another green and you want to reset. I understand all of that, but if the tour's not going to sit here and do anything about it, we can't complain about it week in and week out. So I'm with you there. One other thing before we get to the RBC thing, we gotta shout out Thigala. He did the Tiger Woods shot.
He did. It was incredible.
It was amazing. It was incredible. Vern, I thought, was going to die.
Vern, so there was a moment there where Rom was like one up or two up. Like, it was still close. That chip was going in. Phil was making birdies.
Scheffler.
I was approaching climax. Like, I was sitting on my couch. I was like, oh my God, this is absolutely electric. Like, I was standing in my living room just being like, the Masters rule. Like, I was so horned up watching it. It was the best thing ever. It kind of settled down for a minute there, but that Thigala chip was an absolute electric factory. I loved him, like, within the crowd, right? All the people were around him, and the sellies from the fellas that were around him were incredible. Yeah. Like, they were so juiced up. They're like, we're on 16 at Augusta on a Sunday. The weather's finally turned. This guy just literally did the Tiger shot in front of me, and I'm going to act accordingly. And they did. So credit to them. I was really, really impressed with them.
Okay, this is very niche, but if I can't do it on the golf show, I can't do it anywhere else. I saw a great video on Instagram of Vern Lundquist talking about the Tiger chip, and he was talking about the director, and the director called for the camera to go away from the ball to flash to Tiger, and the guy who's actually supposed to fire the buttons, like, audibled and disobeyed the director to stay on the ball, or we never would have got that shot of the ball crescendoing into the hole.
And you know who liked that the most? The Nike reps.
Yeah, exactly. Phil Knight, big, big fan of that. So, same with Tiger Woods' bank account.
So quickly, and I guess we got to get to this quick here. It's the RBC this weekend, the Heritage, right? And I honestly cannot believe this is an elevated event.
Kind of wild.
It really, really, really offends me that they decided to choose this RBC over the RBC Canadian Open, which has done nothing but host incredible tournaments with great finishes and great winners.
It was the site of the battle against Liv, like when they tell the story.
And to put an elevated event after the Masters is a wild decision. These guys have been playing so much high-stakes golf here for a month. You think back to all the Riviera. You think back to the Players. Think back to Bay Hill, the
waste
Masters.
Waste management, match play.
Waste management, match play. Like, it's been such a grueling stretch of golf here. And to put the week after the Masters, it's an insane decision that they chose this over the RBC Canadian Open. And as Canadian golf fans, we should be absolutely offended by it, that they turn their nose up at it. It's a bad decision by the PGA, and they should be lauded for it. It was stupid.
Hear, hear. I will say, just thinking I'd imagine RBC had some input on that decision. I would think if they sponsor two tour events that they might have had some input on that. But in terms of scheduling, it makes no sense at all. And yeah, it was the site for the battle against Liv. Rory basically held up Greg Norman's head after he won the tournament. Yeah. It was incredible. Awesome. Sammy, always love doing this with you. Really, really enjoyed our Masters recap pod. Hope you enjoyed hearing from us with Stanley on Saturday. You'll be hearing from him plenty this year. It's been the Golf Guys and the Golf Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be right back.